Chapter 15. Seldom hit it. Also they lay a knife on the deck, and walk 7 or 8 steps with eyes close shut, and try to find it. They kneel, place elbows against knees, extend hands in front along the deck, place knife against end of fingers, then clasp hands behind back and bend forward, and try to pick up the knife with their teeth and rise up from knees without rolling over or losing their balance. They tie a string to the shrouds, stand with back against it, walk 3 steps, eyes shut, turn around 3 times, and go and put finger on the string. Only a military man can do it. If you want to know how perfectly ridiculous a grown man looks performing such absurdities in the presence of ladies, get one to try it. Afternoon, the calm is no more. There are 3 vessels in sight. It is so sociable to have them hovering about us on this broad waste of water. It is sunny and pleasant, but blowing hard. Every rag about the ship is spread to the breeze, and she is speeding over the sea like a bird. There is a large brig right astern of us with all her canvas set and chasing us at her best. She came up fast, while the winds were light, but now it is hard to tell whether she gains or not. We can see the people on the forecastle with the glass. The race is exciting. I am sorry to know that we shall soon have to quit the vessel and go ashore if she keeps up this speed. Friday, August 10th, we have breezes and calms alternately. The brig is 2 miles to 3 astern and just stays there. We sail directly east. This brings the brig, with all her canvas set, almost in the eye of the sun when it sets beautiful. She looks sharply cut and black as a coal, against a background of fire and in the midst of a sea of blood. San Francisco, August 20. We never saw the comet again till the 13th, in the morning, 3 miles away. At 3 o'clock that afternoon, 25 days out from Honolulu, both ships entered the Golden Gate of San Francisco side by side, and 300 yards apart. There was a gale blowing, and both vessels clapped on every stitch of canvas, and swept up through the channel, and past the fortresses at a magnificent gait. I have been up to Sacramento, and squared accounts with the Union. They paid me a great deal more than they promised me. Ears aft, Sam. Vi. Letters 1866-67. The Lecturer. Success on the Coast. In New York. The Great Ocean Excursion. It was August 13th, when he reached San Francisco, and wrote in his notebook, home again. No, not home again, in prison again, and all the wild sense of freedom gone. City seems so cramped, and so dreary with toil and care and business anxieties. God help me, I wish I were at sea again. The transition from the dreamland of a becalmed sailing vessel to the dull cheerless realities of his old life, and the uncertainties of his future, depressed him, filled him with forebodings. At one moment he felt himself on the verge of suicide. The world seemed so little worthwhile. He wished to make a trip around the world, a project that required money. He contemplated making a book of his island letters and experiences, and the acceptance by Harper's Magazine of the revised version of the Hornet shipwreck story encouraged this thought. Friends urged him to embody in a lecture the picturesque aspect of Hawaiian life. The thought frightened him, but it also appealed to him strongly. He believed he could entertain an audience, once he got started on the right track. As governor of the third house at Carson City, he had kept the audience in hand. Men in whom he had the utmost confidence insisted that he follow up the lecture idea and engage the largest house in the city for his purpose. The possibility of failure appalled him, but he finally agreed to the plan. In Roughing It, and elsewhere, has been told the story of this venture, the tale of its splendid success. He was no longer concerned, now, as to his immediate future. The lecture field was profitable. His audience laughed and shouted. He was learning the flavor of real success and exulting in it. With Dennis McCarthy, formerly one of the partners in the enterprise, as manager, he made a tour of California and Nevada. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and others, in St. Louis. Virginia City, November 1, 1866. All the folks, affectionate greeting. You know the flush times are past, and it has long been impossible to more than half fill the theater here with any sort of attraction, but they filled it for me night before last, full dollar all over the house. I was mighty dubious about Carson, but the enclosed call and some telegrams said that all right, I lecture there tomorrow night. They offer a full house, and no expense in Dayton, go there next. Sandy Baldwin says I have made the most sweeping success of any man he knows of. I have lectured in San Francisco, Sacramento, Marysville, Grass Valley, Nevada, you bet, Red Dog and Virginia. I am going to talk in Carson, Gold Hill, Silver City, Dayton, Washoe, San Francisco again, and again here, if I have time to rehash the lecture. Then I am bound for New York lecture on the steamer, maybe. I'll leave toward 1st December, but I'll telegraph you. Love to all. Ears. Mark. His lecture tour continued from October until December, a period of picturesque incident, the story of which has been recorded elsewhere. See Mark Twain. A biography, by the same author. It paid him well. He could go home now, without shame. Indeed, from his next letter, full of the boyish elation which always to his last years was the complement of his success, we gather that he is going home with special honors, introductions from ministers, and the like to distinguished personages of the East. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and family, in St. Louis. Sanef, December 4, 1866. My dear folks, I have written to Annie and Sammy and Katie some time ago also, to the balance of you. I called on Rev. Dr. Wadsworth last night with the City College man, but he wasn't at home. I was sorry, because I wanted to make his acquaintance. I am thick as thieves with the Rev. Stebbings, and I am laying for the Rev. Scudder and the Rev. Dr. Stone. I am running on preachers, now, altogether. I find them gay. Stebbings is a regular brick. I am taking letters of introduction to Henry Ward Beecher, Rev. Dr. Ting, and other eminent parsons in the East. Whenever anybody offers me a letter to a preacher, now I snaffle it on the spot. I shall make Rev. Dr. Bellows trot out the fast knacks of the cloth for me when I get to New York. Bellows is an able, upright and eloquent man, a man of imperial intellect, and matchless power. He is Christian in the truest sense of the term, and is unquestionably a brick. Jen. Drum has arrived in Philadelphia, and established his headquarters there, as Adjutant Gen. To Major. Jen. Meade. Colonel Leonard has received a letter from him in which he offers me a complimentary benefit, if I will come there. I am much obliged, really, but I am afraid I shan't lecture much in the States. The China mail steamer is getting ready, and everybody says I am throwing away a fortune in not going in her. I firmly believe it myself. I sail for the States in the opposition steamer of the 5th inst. Comma positively and without reserve. My room is already secured for me, and is the choicest in the ship. I know all the officers. Ears. Affy Mark. We get no hint of his plans, and perhaps he had none. If his purpose was to lecture in the East, he was in no hurry to begin. Arriving in New York, after an adventurous voyage, he met a number of old Californians, men who believed in him and urged him to lecture. He also received offers of newspaper engagements, and from Charles Henry Webb, who had published The Californian, which Bret Hart had edited, came the proposal to collect his published sketches, including the Jumping Frog story, in book form. Webb himself was in New York, and offered the sketches to several publishers, including Canton, who had once refused the frog story by omitting it from Artemus Ward's book. It seems curious that Canton should make a second mistake and refuse it again, but publishers were wary in those days, and even the newspaper success of the frog story did not tempt him to venture it as the title tale of a book. Webb finally declared he would publish the book himself, and Clemens, after a few weeks of New York, joined his mother and family in St. Louis, and gave himself up to a considerable period of visiting, lecturing meantime in both Hannibal and Keokuk. Fate had great matters in preparation for him. The Quaker City Mediterranean excursion, the first great ocean picnic, was announced that spring, and Mark Twain realized that it offered a possible opportunity for him to see something of the world. He wrote at once to the proprietors of the Alta California and proposed that they send him as their correspondent. To his delight, his proposition was accepted, the Alta agreeing to the $1,200 passage money, and $20 each for letters. The Quaker City was not to sail until the 8th of June, but the Alta wished some preliminary letters from New York. Furthermore, Webb had the Frog book in press, and would issue it May 1st. Clemens, therefore, returned to New York in April, and now once more being urged by the Californians to lecture, he did not refuse. Frank Fuller, formerly governor of Utah, took the matter in hand and engaged Cooper Union for the venture. He timed it for May 6th, which would be a few days after the appearance of Webb's book. Clemens was even more frightened at the prospect of this lecture than he had been in San Francisco, and with more reason, for in New York his friends were not many, and competition for public favor was very great. There are two letters written May 1st, one to his people, and one to Bret Harte, in San Francisco, that give us the situation. End of this Project Gutenberg text of letters vol. 1, by Mark Twain. Mark Twain's letters 1867 to 1875, arranged with comment by Albert Bigelow Payne, Volume 2. To Bret Harte, in San Francisco. Westminster Hotel, May 1st, 1867. Dear Bret, I take my pen in hand to inform you that I am well, and hope these few lines will find you enjoying the same God's blessing. The book is out, and is handsome. It is full of damnable errors of grammar, and deadly inconsistencies of spelling in the Frog sketch, because I was away, and did not read the proofs, but be a friend, and say nothing about these things. When my hurry is over, I will send you an autograph copy to Pison the children with. I am to lecture in Cooper Institute next Monday night. Pray for me. We sail for the Holy Land June 8. Try to write me to this hotel, and it will be forwarded to Paris, where we remain 10 or 15 days. Regards and best wishes to Mrs. Bret and the family. Truly your friend Mark. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and family, in St. Louis. Westminster Hotel, May 1st, 1867. Dear folks, don't expect me to write for a while. My hands are full of business on account of my lecture for the 6th inst. And everything looks shady, at least, if not dark. I have got a good agent, but now after we have hired Cooper Institute, and gone to an expense in one way or another of $500, it comes out that I have got to play against Speaker Colfax at Irving Hall, Ristori, and also the double troupe of Japanese jugglers, the latter opening at the Great Academy of Music, and with all this against me, I have taken the largest house in New York and cannot back water. Let her slide. If nobody else cares, I don't. I'll send the book soon. I am awfully hurried now, but not worried. Ears. Sam. The Cooper Union lecture proved a failure and a success. When it became evident to Fuller that the venture was not going to pay, he sent out a flood of complimentaries to the school teachers of New York City and the surrounding districts. No one seems to have declined them. Clemens lectured to a jammed house, and acquired much reputation. Lecture proposals came from several directions, but he could not accept them now. He wrote home that he was 18 Alta letters behind, and had refused everything. Those. Nast, the cartoonist, then in his first fame, propped a joint tour, Clemens to lecture while he, Nast, would illustrate with lightning sketches. But even this could not be considered now. In a little while he would sail, and the days were over full. A letter written a week before he sailed is full of the hurry and strain of these last days. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and family in St. Louis, Westminster Hotel, New York, June 1, 1867. Dear folks, I know I ought to write oftener, just got here last, and more fully, but I cannot overcome my repugnance to telling what I am doing, or what I expect to do, or propose to do. Then, what have I left to write about? Manifestly nothing. It isn't any use for me to talk about the voyage, because I can have no faith in that voyage till the ship is underway. How do I know she will ever sail? My passage is paid, and if the ship sails, I sail in her, but I make no calculations, have bought no cigars, no sea-going clothing, have made no preparation, whatever, shall not pack my trunk till the morning we sail. Yet my hands are full of what I am going to do the day before we sail, and what isn't done that day will go undone. All I do know or feel is that I am wild with impatience to move. Half a dozen times I have wished I had sailed long ago in some ship that wasn't going to keep me chained here to chafe for lagging ages while she got ready to go. Curse the endless delays. They always kill me, they make me neglect every duty, and then I have a conscience that tears me like a wild beast. I wish I never had to stop anywhere a month. I do more mean things the moment I get a chance to fold my hands and sit down than ever I can get forgiveness for. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.